Good morning, church family. Greetings in Jesus' name. Trees. The most integral part of a tree, I think, is the roots. Think about the root system. And if you ever went to tear up a bush or even cut down a tree, that was only part of the process. The rest of the process was taking care of the roots, getting a stump grinder and taking out what's beneath the surface. Recently, we got some fruit trees, and Ruth Ann has been spearheading that. And she was looking at, you know, how to take care of fruit trees. And you can train them to grow in different ways. So if you can train them to grow up tall, or you can train them to grow out more broadly. So she got some stakes and some wire and is training them to kind of go out a little bit more. That's what we can see. Also, periodically, actually, through these past couple weeks when it was really dry, she would send the girls out with her phone and a timer and say, hey, go to each fruit tree and water it for so long. The water would disappear into the ground, and we couldn't really see the effects of it. After a while, though, it was very interesting. Brown grass. But a little patch around each of the fruit trees was really tall, green, lush grass. Its roots were getting watered. As I think about a tree and its roots, you can only do so much to decide where the roots go. But one thing they tell me is that a tree's roots will go towards nourishment. It's going to go towards the water. That's going to attract the roots. So you can't necessarily train the roots like you can maybe train the branches of the fruit tree, but you can invite the roots to places of nourishment. I see relationships or connection between human as being similar to that. It can't be forced, but you can invite that connection. So this morning, I ask a question. How do we engage, encourage, and induce connection between generations? Let me tell you a story to start. It has to do with people who are influential in my life. That was my teacher in school. In fifth and sixth grade, I might have shared this before, but my teacher came to me and said, hey, you need to push yourself further. And he made me study the geography, the maps around the world, all the countries and their capitals. And he really encouraged me. He gave me some incentive to put hard work into this. He had continued to come back to me and have conversation. Along with that, he was a teacher who took time for stories. Hindsight, maybe too many stories. He would sit on the edge of his desk and he would commence into a story from his past. We loved it. We got to see and get glimpses into his life. One time, he came here to church. I think if I recall right, it was a revivals week, and he came one evening with his family. And he had quite a few children. And I thought this was pretty cool. My teacher was coming to my church. So I got my notebook out, and I went back to him afterwards, and I said, hey, tell me all your children's names. And I sat there and wrote down all his children's names and their ages. And hindsight, I'm a little embarrassed. Because afterwards, some of my friends came to me, why are you hanging out with the teacher? Why are you writing all those things down? To me, it was, he cared about me, so I'm going to care about him. I'm interested in what about his life and his family. He started that connection because he cared. This morning, I'm going to talk a little bit about connection, specifically between different generations. This subject was tasked to me a couple months ago, and so the past couple months, I've I've been studying and observing and actually got quite a bit of feedback. Some of you sitting here this morning responded to my questionnaire I put out in questions around how we can connect between the generations. And so this morning, I don't have a specific text I'm going to go to, but I want to share with you my findings in this question of how can we connect between generations? Is it needed? Is it hard? As we think about connection between different generations, I think sometimes I feel, and what I hear from others, it feels like there's a disconnect because the reality is I connect with somebody who's at the same stage in life as I am. That's the easiest connection point. We share something in common. And so I'm going to gravitate towards those people who share my interest, who share my same struggles that I'm in. And while that's all needed, imagine if a bunch of 13-year-old boys got together and said, we know what it's like. We understand each other. We're going to start making decisions about life. Shane, where would you end up? At the cabin every weekend? The reality is, if we surround ourselves with people who think only like us, is that good? So this morning, I want to ask the question, why connection? Why is it important? Why the disconnect? And then I want to look briefly at three things that we can focus on as we think about connection between generations. Why connection? If you look in the Bible, there are many illustrations of older people connecting with the younger people. Specifically in Titus, it calls out the older people to train the younger people. It's needed. So there in Titus, they are saying that it is important for the older people to walk with younger people and pass on their wisdom, pass on their experience, the things they faced in life, so that other people can learn from them. That's in Titus. Go back to 1 Kings 12, verses 6 to 8. Talks about, I think it's Rehoboam. He takes over leading the people there of Israel. And he's wondering what he should do next. And so he goes to the older people, the older guys, and he says, hey, how should I lead the people here? What should my leadership look like? The old guys, the elderly, responded with some words of advice, but he didn't like it. And so he turned to the younger guys for advice, and it didn't turn out well. That was an illustration of where he wasn't listening to people who had different thoughts, different advice than what he wanted. Proverbs 20:29 says, the young man's glory is his, anybody know? Strength. That's why young men, we like to wrestle, we like to arm wrestle. I want to be stronger than you. That's the reality of a young man. Their glory is their strength. The verse goes on to say, the beauty of the old man is white hair. Wisdom is what that is. So the difference here, Solomon is portraying the difference between the young men. They find glory in their strength. The old men, they get to life and what they find value in is their experience, their wisdom, what they've been through. They realize it's not all about the muscles. Muscles are overrated. Another illustration. We're asking the question, why is connection important? Look at the story of Naomi and Ruth. I stand there and I observe that story and I'm amazed. Ruth was in her home country. Naomi goes to leave. What for relationship did Ruth have with Naomi that made her want to go along? It doesn't give much context to it other than that Ruth said, I want what you have. Where you go, I will go. obviously that pointed to some deeper relationship, respect, that Ruth had for Naomi. What did that look like in that day? I don't know. Another story that stands out to me is Mordecai and Esther. Incredible. Mordecai takes Esther under his wing, and then this opportunity comes up to go be a queen. He says, Esther, you should go. He nudges her along. And then she's in the queen's palace, and he hears word of trouble for his people. And so he calls Esther and says, Esther, you got to do something. I don't know. If I was a young person, that would have sounded scary to me. But obviously, Esther had some for trust in Mordecai. Obviously, there was a relationship, a deeper relationship from the past that Esther believed in. Says, Mordecai, I trust you. And along with promptings from Mordecai and God, she was there for such a time as this. Another illustration. Again, we're observing, why is connection between different generations important? The story of Paul and Barnabas on their missionary journeys. They got into a fight about who they should take along. Study it sometime. It's great. They start arguing about if they should bring John Mark along. Barnabas says, of course. Barnabas is the encourager. He's always looking for the good in people. He says, let's bring John Mark. I know he's young. He's a little immature, but he can work with us. Paul said, not happening. They actually split up and went their different ways. Go to the end of Paul's life. When he is in need of help, do you know who he asks for? John. He writes a letter. He says, send me John because I need him. I need his youthfulness and energy. Wow. We need each other. Again, I'm trying to see, is connection between different generations important? In those illustrations that I give, and we could spend a lot more time, I think it is. A second thing I see in the importance of connection is humans need it. At the core of humans is a need for belonging and value. In a family setting, we see the dad being the protector role. We see a mom fulfilling the comforter role. In a relationship and a connection is where we find belonging, meaning, and value to life. Connection is important beyond just the people who think like us and who are maybe the same age as us. So we could spend a lot of time, but I think you agree with me. It's important and it's needed. My second question I want to ask is why the disconnect? Why is there a disconnect? If we know it's important, if we see stories in the Bible, we observe that we need to learn from each other. Why is there a disconnect? I have an illustration of the different types of wood joints. Why the connect was a good solid joint. This connection, not so much. Or maybe you can think about a receptacle. Its prongs are loose and continues to fall down. There's a disconnect. It doesn't work well. Turn with me to 1 Peter, please. This is the one verse I would like you to stay open to. First Peter chapter 5. I'm going to summarize. The first couple verses are talking about the elders. Leading the flock that God has given them, not being lords over them. Go to verse 5 with me. 1 Peter 5, verse 5. Likewise, ye younger, submit yourselves unto the elder. Yea, all of you be subject one to another and be clothed with humility. For God resisteth the proud and giveth grace to the humble. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you. I think the biggest reason for disconnect is this, lack of humility. In verse 5, he says, be clothed with humility, be subject one to another. Because what comes out of an attitude of I can't learn from you is pride. But when there's humility and seeking to understand from each other, that's when there can be connection. No, you're not always going to agree. I'm not saying that. As I looked into what causes disconnect, I reached out to, I think it was 50 different people responded to me and had many, many conversations around this. As I observe what brings disconnect, a thread that I kept hearing again and again was a fear of misunderstanding. What if they don't understand me? Is that humility? So I propose this morning, and I'm just bringing my thoughts and observations, that maybe a reason for the disconnect is a lack of humility. The next thing I see as a reason maybe for disconnect, and I was maybe a little cautious to talk about this. My next two slides actually are kind of splitting people up into groups and maybe giving labels. So as you see these labels and groups, you might react. You're going to find yourself in some of these groups and you're going to say, no, that's not me. That may not be the case. It's okay. I invite you to maybe learn something from this. Ever hear these words before? The builders, the boomers, Generation X, Generation Y, the millennials, Gen Z, Gen Alpha. So we all know that over time, there's different generations. We all have different ages. And so over time, what they've done is divided the different generations up into different groups. And so back before the 1940s, you have the builders. And what happened before the 40s? You had the World Wars, the Great Depression. So what we have is we have the builders coming out of the Great Depression, and they were greatly affected by it. They were known for their thriftiness, their respectfulness, and their loyalty. And again, bear with me, this is giving labels to a whole group of people. It doesn't apply to everybody, but observation. Generations. Then come along the boomers. How many are in the boomer era? Don't raise your hand. The 46 to 64, roughly. Again, people talk about where these years actually end, but roughly. They were considered to be the economically influential generation. So what is happening in the world over this time? We're coming out of the Great Depression, coming out of the World Wars. Things were booming. Things were going well. There was a lot of opportunity. But interesting thing is I observed this generation, they were still connected to how hard life was in the beginning of the 90s. They still understood that. Just observing. Then come along Generation X, 65 to 79. These were known to be the street smart. I mean, common sense, they got it. Raise your hand if you're in this group. No, again, don't raise hands. They were the no mood for drama. They just get things done. Again, observing. So now, if you watch with me, they're a couple years removed away from the World Wars, the Great Depression. All right? They're the children of the boomers. Then come along Generation Y, about the 80s to 94, 95, somewhere in there. These were the book smart. Difference between book smart and street smart, maybe more information they knew. They were adaptable to tech. Okay, as the technology was continuing to advance, they were adaptable to it. The mentality over this kind of era was experience over work. In other words, let's experience the things. If you ask the people in this time period, a lot of them were the ones who started traveling to different places more, because it was available. Then we have Generation Z, 95 to 09, somewhere in there. They were the social natives. They were digitally connected. Technology in this age just changed drastically. They were into discussing global and social issues. They wanted to. They cared about the current events where we were today. Gen Alpha, 2010 to 2024. They're known to be most materially endowed. They were the tech savvy generations. They got tech. That's all they knew. You could label them the screenagers. Can't be away from screens. Now, as we observe that, again, I say I bring this cautiously. But as you observe this, what this really points to is that each generation had a different set of experiences and happenings that they went through. Now imagine with me, as a Gen X and a Gen Z sit down and try to solve a problem in front of them. Do you think they'll see things the same way? Could this be a reason for a tendency for disconnect? Again, I am observing. What brings about the disconnect? The next graph I would like to show is specifically thinking about men in the different stages of their life. When I think about a child entering life, I view them as dependent. They are so dependent on their parents and their family, the training. So, in this time period, I would like to call it, they're supported. They need to be supported through this time. And parents, those years from one to their teenagers, so influential, integral to relationships for later on in life. Anyway, that was a bunny trail. I've adapted this this graph from Anthony Hurst. He was the one who is again making observation. As he observed teenagers and young men, he observed them to be the ones who are searching or seeking for the questions about life. What is life all about? And then as you get past the seeking phase, you say, I got it. As you enter your 30s, oh boy, I'm the solution. The savior mentality he's observed to sometimes creep in. I'm here to help all the problems. And then as you start helping all the problems and you move into your later years, you start finding, what's the point of all this? History repeats itself. The problems continue. Problems don't go away. And soon what happens is you start becoming cynical. And I've just done a study on cynicism. And then after you start becoming cynical, you say, well, what's the point? I'm just going to be quiet. It's better if I'm quiet. I don't want to talk about it. Now, again, I bring this carefully because this is not, I'm not trying to put labels on, if you're in these different groups, you say, no, that's not me. That's not the case. This is a tendency. As we go through life, as men go through life, this is maybe a tendency. So if we start developing these attitudes, does that affect the conversations we have? Next, in my next example of maybe why there's a disconnect happened to me, and I can't remember if I shared this story here before. It was my math class. Did I tell a story about my math class and a discussion with my eighth graders? We're sitting there in math class. Actually, I was up there. My eighth graders are coming up from recess, their morning break, and I said, you know what? I was thinking about this, connecting with a different generation. I want to connect with the next generation. You see, there's sometimes some trends that go around, but I sometimes question. I thought, you know what? I'm going to lean into it, and I'm going to try to understand and be like, be cool. That was a mistake. They come back from class, and I said, all right, guys, let's get cooking. Woo, fireworks, explosion. That's not how you use cooking. You can only use cooking in this context. All right. So it proceeded into a discussion of them teaching me when I should be using that term. Okay. I was trying to learn. And then proceeded, we got talking about different. And then we got into this discussion. I said, hey, do you think you have anything to offer Or no, I said, do you think I have anything to offer you? And that led us into a discussion of the boomers and Gen X and all that. That was interesting. They thought I was a boomer, so I got that problem solved. And they said, no, I don't think your generation has anything to offer us. I said, okay. I said, do you have anything to offer us old people? Oh, yeah. We understand technology better than my parents and better than you guys. I mean, just come to us. Okay. I'm trying to listen and understand. Finally, a girl in the back pipes up and says, hey, Mr. Weaver, question. Do you think you have anything to offer us? Glad you asked. And then I proceeded to try to reveal some areas I think that my generation can offer their generation. I could hardly get a sentence in. They were firing back. They were responding, rejecting all ideas I had. Now, granted, in that case, not everybody was piping up, so I might have some eighth graders here this morning. It's often a minority that's the loudest in a group. Okay, I'll preface that. I had so much fun in that math class because we were learning from each other. In that class, though, I was reminded that when we have different intakes, that affects how we communicate. So a younger generation might have different intakes or different interests than what I'm in. So then when we communicate, there is a tendency to miss each other. Again, just observing. Another, my slide that I have up now, the reason for disconnect. These are the questions that surfaced as I talked to people about why there's a disconnect in relationship between generations. And it's exactly these questions. Will I be judged? Will I be misunderstood? Is it safe to open up? And here's the interesting thing. I had older people respond to this. I had younger people, the spectrum. Here's what I saw. Everyone fears misunderstanding, but each group subtly believes or assumes that the other generation is the greater risk. So you have young people saying, oh, the old people just, they're old-fashioned. And then you have old people saying, what is the young people going to think of me and what I went through? And so right away, we're starting to assume things about different generations. Why the disconnect? I bring those as proposals of things that lead to disconnect. We assume, we judge, we project from a distance, and it is because of our media age. We can see into lives like we've never been able to see into lives like we've never been able to before. And we make ultimatum statements, absolute statements, without seeking to understand the whole context. That's what, as I was hearing from people and observing, that's what it boiled down to. We're not seeking to understand before we make ultimatum statements. So there's a need for connection. There tends to be a disconnect. I gave you some areas that I see as reasons. I would like to end our time by looking at ways we can, or things we can focus on. What can we focus on in bringing connection? I bring the first word is engage. And I'd like to give you a mental picture of a clutch. How many know how to drive a manual vehicle? Okay. If I step into my little car, little blue, and I go to shift without engaging the clutch, things are not going to go well. It grinds. It jerks around. You have to engage the clutch before you start shifting. And so as we think about connection, I want us to have that idea in mind. Before we just try to shift and make the connection happen, it's got to be a soft entry. It's got to be engaging the clutch first. And I think one way we do that, back up. I said every generation fears to be misunderstood. But a theme I heard coming from everybody was they sought for curiosity, conversation, an intentional connection. So that begs the question, how can we be curious? And here is, I propose, is the biggest takeaway to all relationships and connection. That is, seek to understand. Seek to understand before wanting to be understood. If you seek to understand the other person, ask questions. That will have a huge impact. And in my life, as a young boy growing up, I had role models. And those were often the men who Dad was with. One of them was Val Yoder. Dad spent quite a bit of time with Val Yoder and Igo. And I looked up to Val. And there was one evening, they had an Igo youth rally down in Lancaster. And Val was sharing, getting youth excited about the opportunity of Igo. We were there, and Val was coming to our place for the night. Dad wanted to leave to go home a while. So he said, "Hey, Zach, would you want to stay with Val and just show him the way home?" "Sure, Dad. Yeah, I'll ride with Val." So Dad left. Val finished talking to the people, and I sat down with Val, and we started driving home. And Val started talking all about himself. No, I wouldn't be sharing the story if that was the case. As a little, I think I was 12 years old, Val started asking me about my life. He started asking me about my school and the things I enjoyed. Wow, that to this day has an impact on me. He cared about me. He could have talked about so many other things. Seek to understand. Don't expect and assume. People need to be heard. Secondly, as we think about engaging, we have to stay adapt to the change. We have to stay current to the challenges. The acceleration of change over the past 20 years is incredible. And I've found myself, at I like to think a very young age, already reacting to some change. You mean I gotta start thinking about change? I'm starting to like consistency more and more. But as times change, there's a need to address the current issues, the challenges of the day. I heard a story of a church talking about changing something. And the elderly people in the church said, "No way. This is the way we've always done it." Two things to look out for in connection between generations. Young people, never say they're just old-fashioned. Mm-mm. Older people, never say, "This is the way we've always done it. I walked to school uphill both ways, 2 feet of snow." Okay, you may say it as a joke. But when that is the tone of, "This is what I had to go through, so this is what you should have to go through." When we have those attitudes, that is not staying, that is not shifting to the change that might be needed for the day. Number one, engage. Let's think about engaging. Number two, encourage. And the picture I'd like to put in front of you with encourage is a trellis. I had to put up a trellis. We had something growing up the side of our shed. Ask Ruth Ann what it was. And I saw Ruth Ann out there the next day, like forcing the plant up the trellis. No, you put the trellis there and you allow the plant to grow up the trellis. That's the point of a trellis. As we think about connection, we need to think about the things we care about being a trellis or an invitation to grow the place that we would like. Marion, I'm glad you're here this morning because I get to use an illustration. Marion spent quite a few years investing in the Shenandoah clubs. And as she was going up there to do painting and art, she started inviting some of the youth girls with her. Ruth Ann was one of them. She said, "Hey, Ruth Ann, would you want to come with me? Ride along with me up to Shenandoah?" And Ruth Ann started riding along. And out of that formed a relationship, and I think that's part of the reason Ruth Ann likes art. But that was an invitation from an older person saying, "Hey, come along with me. Want to join me?" That was providing a trellis, an opportunity for somebody else to go along. So thank you, Marion, for modeling that. As I think about a trellis and connections being a trellis, we need to create spaces for joy and community to happen. I think of the church picnic. When the church picnic happens, I'm amazed. The majority of us are there. I love it. That's because, man, this is a way for us to connect. Spaces of joy and community need to happen. That's how we encourage the trellis. Thirdly, induce. No, ladies, don't worry. I'm not talking about that inducing. Maybe a better word would be prune. But actually, they kind of go along because pruning hurts. It's something that comes with a little bit of pain. And as I think about connection, along with listening, along with engaging and encouraging, engaging the clutch, building the trellis, there also is a place for pruning and speaking truth. Truth needs to happen. Honesty needs to take place in a relationship. And as I think about this, I think about people need a purpose in life. They need a vision and mission. Vision is the goal. Mission is how we get there. And when people start losing purpose for life, it's not good. Things start going downhill. I've heard, actually back to that church situation, church far away from here, there was an older man who responded in that situation and says, "Guys, be careful. If we want the young people to own the church, then we got to go along with some of their ideas. They have to feel a part of it." Ah, that's giving the young people some purpose. What for purpose and truth are you speaking into the relationships that you have? So if we're trying to speak purpose into people's lives, part of that is sometimes releasing our power. Let me say it this way. People can easily hide a desire for control in a cloak of conviction. People can easily hide a desire for control in a cloak of conviction. Let me say it this way. If I think things should be done a certain way, I say, "Well, I have a conviction that you better not argue with my conviction." Ugh, that's scary. No. And so what I quickly do then is I hide just personal preferences and motives underneath a cloak of conviction. No, that is holding on to power and control. And so in your conversations and relationships, sometimes you need to purposely step out of the way, release the power and control. Sometimes we need to let people fail and be right there to pick them up. I don't know where that line is, but I know it's needed. So as helping people find purpose, we release our power, but it really comes down to our posture. As we think about inducing and pruning and speaking truth, again and again, as I heard back from people, it was not necessarily changing the structures that were in place, but rather about changing the posture. What do I mean about posture? What's posture? We don't like posture. It feels better to slouch. And in school, when typing, my teacher would make me sit up straight and elbows right. She's right. Because now behind the computer, I feel better at the end of the day if I have a better posture. You see, posture in talking to people is so important. It's kind of like our tone, like Damien talked about. Our posture is so important. Do we have an attitude of leaning in to understand? Or do we have an attitude of, "Why you do that?" You feel the difference right there? Your posture matters. Engage, encourage, and induce. Tree roots are integral to a tree. All we can do is invite it to nourishment. The biggest factor, I think, for connection between people is, again, coming back, seeking to understand. And I've shared this illustration, I think, here already. But one more time, it originates from Stephen Brubaker. I've adapted it as such. On the outside of a tree, I like to picture a person as a tree. On the outside, we see the way of life, how they do it. What supports how we do it is our beliefs and our values. What do we believe about life? What do we value? That's what makes us do what we do and how we do it. What feeds our beliefs and our values? It's our heroes, the people we hold high. It's our leisure. It's where we want to spend our entertainment time. It's our symbols, kind of like on a vehicle, you know, we argue about which symbol's better. That's a symbol. The cross is a symbol. What symbols do we hold up? What meaning do they have to us? traditions, the things we do over and over again. But this felt incomplete to me as I thought about connection, okay? So we're supposed to listen to people. We're not supposed to just start pruning the trees without understanding the context. Where are their roots going? Why do people's roots go to where they do? It's often affected by the soil, right? What's the soil in a person's life? Our story. Our experiences and what we've been through greatly impact the places where we spend our time, which greatly impacts the beliefs and values that we have, which impacts the way we do life. So, brothers and sisters, the best way to make connection with others, here's their story. Seek to understand. Engage, encourage, and induce. Engage the clutch, build the trellis, and spend time pruning. That's how we can have connection. Please stand with me. I trust that that can be an encouragement to you as we think about our connections. We'll pray, and then Joel, if you could have a chorus of song, and you can consider yourselves dismissed. Heavenly Father, thank you for being our God. Thank you for human relationships. Thank you that we need each other. And as we go through life, we recognize there needs to be connection with people, different ages, with people who think differently. Help us to have an attitude of humility. May we seek to understand each other and our stories and engage the clutch of connection. Encourage, build spaces of connection, and then speak truth into each other so that we can be an encouragement. I pray the church here at Myerstown would seek these connections deeper than just surface level. Thank you for the relationships that are here. I thank you for each one gathered here this morning. And as we go into the week before us, I pray that you would give us the strength, the energy to do what you have called us to. Help us to rely solely on you. In Jesus' name, amen.